Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast with Sujai Johnson and Vivek Patel, where we share ideas about how you can have more harmonious relationships with your kids and also how you can have a more harmonious relationship with yourself. We'd love you to subscribe and share this podcast around and let us know what you think in the comments.
All right, let's get started.
Today, I want to talk about perfectionism in a way, an aspect of perfectionism, and it's the idea of doing your best. A lot of the time, adults, parents, tell their kids, as long as you do your best, I'll be happy. And they'll ask them, did you try your best? And there's this whole culture around trying your best, around being your best, around trying your hardest. Doing your best and trying your hardest. Those are the two. Doing your best, trying the hardest. And the third one that goes with that is don't quit and don't give up. Actually, that's two, because don't quit and don't give up are slightly different, but practically the same. And I love all of those things personally. I love quitting. I love giving up. I love those two things. I think they're powerful things. And I also love not doing my best. I also love not trying hard. I think all four of those things, the opposite of what the common idea of them are. So if we look at all eight of those things, doing your best, not doing your best, trying your hardest, not trying your hardest, and then quitting and persevering, giving up. I guess quitting and not quitting, what would be the opposite of quitting? See, I think of quitting as like a larger thing, like I'm going to quit my softball team. But giving up is like more like in the activity that you're doing. You know, you could still be doing it and you give up, or you just give up on that one game, or you give up, even giving up on the run, running from first to second, and you give up. You know, the giving up is like maybe smaller, and quitting is larger. So quitting and giving up. The opposite seems to be persevering in both. I'm not sure. But anyways, you know what I'm saying, right? All eight of those things are valid choices. And when we limit our kids' choices, it makes it harder for them to see their options. It makes it harder for them to make informed, intelligent decisions, because they don't have all the options. And quitting is, the idea of quit has such a negative, weak connotation to it. But there's lots of reasons to stop doing something. There's lots of ways something that we're doing might not be serving us, you know? Recently, I read a parent who's, it was on some food post, and one parent said, I insist that my kids take at least one bite so they know whether they like it or not. And there's a element of not quitting there, right? Don't quit before you've at least tried one bite. But what if I have my own really valid reason for not wanting to try even one bite? Like every time I'm very emotional about this. Every time I read that sentence, and I hear it all the time, I get angry. I honestly get angry, because I feel the coercion and the force and the judgment and the expectations and the disappointment and everything in that idea, you know? Because sometimes our kids might have a really valid reason not even to want to take one bite. Maybe it smells funny. Maybe it looks funny. Maybe they're not feeling well. Maybe they're just listening to the signals of their body, you know? Maybe they have a bad experience with having tasted something and they need to heal from that. I tasted something they didn't like and it really upset them and caused some kind of trauma, and maybe they need to heal from it. Like, there's so many reasons why. It could be texture, you know? There's so many reasons why a kid might not want to take even that one bite. And when we push them into it, for some value that we think we're imparting to them, we often will do more damage than good. And the parent said, and now my kid is not a picky eater. They'll just eat. They're very adventurous and they have a wide palate. Sure, but maybe there was a non-coercive, collaborative, connecting way you could have taught that, inspired that. You know, maybe you could have made it safe and enjoyable rather than force and pressure from an authority figure and all that stuff. But that's not really, I didn't really want to talk about food. I wanted to talk about quitting, but it's all related. You can see how I just flowed into talking about food, because it's really all related. But the idea of doing your best, that's really what I wanted to talk about too. You know, when my daughter was growing up, I was really careful not to tell her to do her best. I told her that doing your best is something that makes sense in certain circumstances. And in a whole lot of other circumstances, giving half effort is also good. Because, you know, 24 hours in a day, 8 of them, 10 of them, or if you're like me, 5 of them sleeping. But still, you know, so there's like 18, 20 hours in the day. You know, those hours are precious. And where we allocate our time and where we allocate our energy and how we use it is really important to learn, you know. And that because a lot of the time, if you give all your energy to one thing, you don't have enough energy left for another thing. And if the thing you gave all your energy to isn't that important, and then something more important comes along, you don't have the energy for it, right? And so this is part of boundaries. This is part of limits, limit setting. This is part of, what's the word I'm looking for? Managing our own energy. This is a part of tuning into what's meaningful to you and what's not meaningful to you. You know, a lot of the time something's not meaningful, and that's a good reason to leave it. That's a good reason not to put a lot of effort into it. You know, like I never liked geography in school. Well, it never made sense to me. I mean, now I kind of would like to know a bit more about geography, but I'm 51. So there's no pressure, you know, and no one's telling me to do my best at geography. But when I was studying geography in school and people would say, do your best, I'd be like, it makes no sense. Why would I do my best at this thing that has no relevance to me, is not interesting to me? And then we give kids all this pressure. So the thing about the problem is it gives kids all this pressure. And then if they don't do what we think is their best, because who the F gets to decide what someone's best is and what different aspects and influences go into determining whether in this moment that was your best or not, right? Who gets to determine that? So the idea is that if you don't do your best, and best is clearly evaluated by some external authority, then you're a failure. You're not worthy. You're not worthy of acceptance and celebration and embracing. You've let me down, and I'm your parent. And you know, so there's this whole thing wrapped up in all that, right? And it connects to the idea of when a kid lies or steals, and the parent says, "I don't trust you anymore because of that. It's hard for me to trust you now. You're gonna have to earn my trust." It's the same vibration, you know. It's using shame, it's using feeling bad about yourself to try and motivate goodness. We want to motivate our kids. Sure, I want to motivate my kid, sure. But what do I want to motivate her to do? To persevere through something she hates? No, I want her to find out what makes sense to her, and I want her to persevere in the things that make sense to her. Now, the thing is, I didn't say what she enjoys. I said makes sense. Feels right is another way. Feels like the right thing to do, right? Because there are times that the thing that feels right to do, the thing that makes the most sense, is wildly inconvenient, and you would never want to really do it, and you don't get any joy from it, but you do it because it's the right thing to do, and it's the right thing to do based on your own values and your own intuition and your own feelings, not what someone else has forced upon you or told you. This is where you know it's the right thing for you to do in that moment. And like, for example, when my mom and my sister got sick in 2018, I moved in with the two of them. The three of us moved in together. It was like we were living together again from when we were teens. And I spent like 2 months living with them, taking care of them. And I loved being with them, but I missed my family and they missed me. And it was a really hard time for all of us. And there was a lot of fear because of all the health stuff that was happening. And in a way, we're still dealing with the fallout of that really intense time. But I know that that decision to move in and take care of them was 100% the right thing to do. And I feel so good about having done it because I was following my heart. It was not, it was enjoyable being with them, but it was not overall the most enjoyable option, right? But it was certainly the right option for me. It was the option that made the most sense for me. And my family felt the same way, you know? It was just, It was this sense that from all of us that Vivek has to move in. It was just clear, you know? But that didn't come from a feeling of, I have to do my best. That didn't come from a feeling of, don't quit. It didn't come from a feeling of pressure, you have to be a good person. It just felt right. And sometimes the thing that feels right is the harder thing. And all of us, you know, I mean, all of us here being parents, and especially attempting to be gentle parents, conscious parents, going against the structure and the mainstream ideas of society, and parenting in a totally different way, is hard. It's really super hard. And yet we can see the power and the beauty in it. So we get inspiration from that. But we still have to fight through so much, you know. And for me, the idea of having to always do my best is just draining. There's lots of, like, drawing is one perfect example of that. I love to draw. Drawing gives me so much peace and it's meditative. And if you've seen my drawings, you know I'm quite good. But I am very, very adamant that I do not care if my drawings turn out well or not. I am rigid with myself in that. And if I find myself caring, I stop drawing right away. Because the idea that I would draw to do my best and to have all that pressure would ruin the fun for me, would ruin the peace and the meditative aspect of it for me. And it turns into a goal-oriented thing, which it's not. There are things in my life that are goal-oriented, and I might try in a different way with those things. That's why I mentioned before that we have all the different options, and then we look at the different options, and we look at our circumstance, and we use our intuition, we use our list of pros and cons, we use our zooming out and looking at the big picture, we use inquiring, asking for advice from other people, we use research, we use all of these different things to make our decision. But what we're deciding on is which of those things, giving up, not giving up, quitting, not quitting, doing your best, not doing your best, you know, accepting, not, like I said about the drawing, I don't try and do my best when I'm drawing. I just draw. But look what comes out. Because I do it consistently. And then what was the last one? Giving up, not giving up, doing your best, not doing your best. There was a fourth one, but I can't remember what it is now. Trying your hardest. That's it. Trying your hardest. We're just trying a little bit. There are things I do where I just try a little bit because I just want to see, you know, and then I'll try a little more the next time, a little more the next time, maybe a little less the next time. But to have that kind of freedom to really be tuned into the moment and say, what does this moment really call for? What are my deepest desires and values and visions and priorities and principles that I want to live by? And then what do I want out of this moment? And then which of those things makes the most sense in this moment? You know, like me quitting drawing, as soon as I notice myself, and it's very subtle. If someone was watching, they would think, oh, why did he quit? As soon as I notice myself pressuring, it has to look a certain way, I stop. It's a discipline for me. I stop because it's too precious. I don't want to ruin it, you know? And that might really look like not persevering. Why don't you just push through the thing? Why don't you just change it? Why don't you just change your mind? Why don't you shift? Blah, 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 blah. I say blah, 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 because I used to tell people that. I used to tell people that all the time. But now I just would much rather take all that pressure off myself. And I certainly want to take that pressure off my kids. And that's the main thing out here, you know? So, of course, as with all of these kind of issues that I talk about, a lot of the work is about our own relationship to ourselves. Accepting that it's okay to not do something well. Accepting that it's okay to not try our hardest on everything that we do. Accepting that it's okay to take breaks and go away and come back to something. Accepting that it's okay to make mistakes and to not do something perfectly. Actually, to do something terribly is great. So great. It's great to do something terribly because maybe you'll learn something and maybe the next time you'll do it a little less terribly. And if you're gentle with yourself and consistent in that process, you could become really good at it. But if you expect to become really good at it and you're disappointed where you're not, you're never going to get that far because it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be enjoyable.
it's not even going to, it's not going to, I don't know, enjoyable and fun maybe is too much. Because I was talking about being with my, well, you know, when we were together, it was fun. That's the thing. Because I knew it was right, even when it was really hard, we were still, I think, in a good space. And I think it's the same with the drawing, and it's the same with our kids. So we want to, if we want to encourage our kids to persevere, encourage them to persevere when it makes sense to them. Say, you know, kiddo, sometimes you want to work really hard at something, even to the point of you're exhausted. You want to work really hard at something because you want to get it done, because you're excited about it, because it makes sense to you, because you feel it. Yeah, do it. Work really hard. Give it everything you've got. Give it more than what you've got. Sometimes that's really important. Sometimes you want to do about half that. Sometimes you want to just do something with half your energy and half your interest because it's not as important. And so I really want to encourage you when you're working with your kids to help them see as many options available in each situation. If they're frustrated about something, encouraging them to persevere can be useful if there's no pressure. But also be aware that sometimes it's useful to encourage them to let it go. And sometimes it's useful to let them see both options and let them make the choice. Sometimes you can see they want to quit, but they're maybe feeling some kind of pressure, and you can help them with it. Sometimes if something doesn't go really well, they're doing something that doesn't go really well, you can celebrate that. Like celebrating, it seems weird to celebrate mediocrity. We're supposed to try hard. And I'm like, no, man, no. Let's embrace mediocrity. Because, I mean, think about it. How many things can you excel at, really? You know, with the amount of work it takes to excel at something, how many things can you really, really excel at? And then if you only really get into and do the things and enjoy the things that you excel at, then there's this like very limited number of things you can do. But I want to enjoy all sorts of things. I want to enjoy things I'm terrible at and still do them, you know? I want my kid to be able to do all sorts of things she's terrible at and still do them. And then find the things that are meaningful to her and of her own volition, from her own understanding of her effort and her learning process, to put real effort into those things that are meaningful to her, to work really hard and to love that working hard, to value it, to make it a value, right? But the value has to come from within, not from outside where the parent is saying, you have to work hard if you want to make it in this world, because the world is not going to be kind to you. And when you go to school, if you don't work hard, you'll fail at whatever it is, you know, or in any situation or any context. So consider that. Consider that opening up of the options, the opening up of looking at things like effort and doing your best and quitting and trying your best and giving up. Make all of those beautiful things. Make the persevering beautiful and make the giving up beautiful. Because what's at the center of it is honoring oneself, is listening to oneself. And that's where the beauty comes from. And if we can focus on that and build from that foundation, everything else feels so much better. Everything else feels so much more connected and loving, you know? And I think that's something to really take to heart.
I want to talk a little bit today about the construct of backtalk. You know, there are so many mainstream parenting constructs that are incredibly harmful, and they do far more damage than good in the overall. I'm going to be talking over the next couple of weeks about a lot of these ideas and constructs and kind of breaking them down. For all of you, you know, most of you are probably in a good space with most of these ideas. You've probably done a lot of work around them and figured out where you stand with them and how they align with your own values. And yet I find that, you know, some of these old constructs, they've set up the way that our internal responses just kind of click through. And so it takes a little bit of extra work to go in and break it down and to make sure that we're not reacting, responding, and applying to some of the old parenting paradigms that cause more harm than good. And one of those paradigms is certainly the idea of backtalk. You know, when a parent says something in mainstream parenting paradigm, you know, that's final word, and kids aren't really supposed to have any opinions, have any ideas, ask a whole lot of questions. You know, mostly it kind of falls into the because I said so category. And here's the thing, is that, you know, children are human beings that are worthy of respect, and they're worthy of having opinions, and they're worthy of having ideas, and they're worthy of having boundaries. And a lot of times when we are subscribing to some of these mainstream ideas, particularly the idea of backtalk, you know, we may be shutting down our children's right to autonomy, to set boundaries. And that's really a big one around the idea of backtalk. You know, a parent will tell a child that they need to do something, and the child will say no, which, you know, no is a boundary. No means I don't want to do that. I'm not interested. I don't like it for one reason or another. And when we apply to this no backtalk paradigm, and we put ourselves in that position where we're thinking that, you know, our child telling us no is in some way disrespectful, then in that moment we flip the script, because we think they're being disrespectful. And so then we begin to do things like double down on our ideas and override their autonomy, and you know, force them to do the thing that we want them to do. And you know, in life, a lot of people, when they push back on me on the concept of allowing children to say no and hold their boundaries that way, they'll say things like, well, you know, if you don't tell your child no, or if you, you know, don't force your child to do the thing and allow them to say no, then you're not teaching your child how to interact with that word no. And I disagree very strongly, because, you know, when it comes down to the word no, the best way to interact with it is to hear that it's a boundary and respect that boundary in some way. And that doesn't mean that we just allow our children to run into the street or get away with whatever they want, or, you know, just completely go feral, as some people might refer to it, right? It simply means that we're either going to find a new way to achieve the goal that we set in front of us, or we're going to collaborate. We're going to work together. We're going to deliver. And when we find ourselves in a place where we feel like a child is being disrespectful or rude to us, we're not in a mindset to particularly be respectful of that child and that child's needs and that child's ideas. And so coming from a place where we respect our child's boundaries, and when they say no, they are not being disrespectful to us. And in fact, if we use any kind of force or coercion to override their no, we're getting very much into areas of consent. And there's so much we can teach our children about consent when we interact with that word. The different ways that we can help our children to learn about, you know, their own bodies and what, you know, the amount of respect that they're do, and that their feelings about themselves and their bodies and the way that they're interacting is acceptable and valid. And when we teach our children, when we respect our child's no, we're also teaching our child that respecting somebody else's no is the way to go. When we override their autonomy, the underlying message is that, you know, when we feel that something is for the greater good, that overriding that autonomy is a-okay. And that really leads us into some murky areas. And when we respect our child's autonomy and we respect their right to say no, we don't look at them as disrespectful or backtalking when they say those things. we're teaching them that that's how you interact with that word no, is with a lot of respect and a lot of care. And we don't push past it. Sometimes, you know, sometimes there are times when something needs to happen, like we're at the park and it's getting dark and we really need to go. And there are times when something needs to happen and somebody might say no, but it doesn't mean that that's the end all and be all. And it doesn't mean that we have to push back and force through that no to get a yes. It just means that it's time to approach it from a different angle and recollaborate it. So let's just say that, you know, in that situation where it's time to leave the park, you know, maybe we can discuss what's going to happen after we leave the park. Maybe we can help them to, you know, we can really bring them into their surroundings and talk about what's going on and, you know, point at the sky, get down on their level and point at the sky and show them that it's starting to get cold and that our bellies are starting to get hungry. And, you know, we can work through the thing in a much more, collaborative and relationship-based way where we really genuinely care about that person's experience. Perhaps we can give a few more minutes at the park. Perhaps we can readjust the way that we introduce the idea that we're going to be leaving the park. You know, there's a lot of different things that we can do when we're interacting with respect. As soon as we get to the place where, you know, we feel that it's time for us to take control and it's the end all be all, we're being disrespectful of our children, and our children are learning the lessons that control and coercion are the places that, you know, it's where we can go when we're not getting the results we wanted with other things. So it's really good to try and avoid that. And in other situations, when our children say no, you know, they may be saying no about really anything, right? They could be saying no over an autonomy issue, back-to-back talk. And that was the thing, you know, there's a lot of children, a lot of reasons why, or different categories of things that we might categorize as back talk. You know, if our child tells us no, if they don't want to do something, that could be back talk. If our child has an opinion about something, that could be considered back talk, particularly if we as parents haven't done a lot of work around the concept and the construct of back talk, then there are multiple different things that we might see as our child back talking us. And so if our child has an opinion about something, we might see that as back talking. Particularly if we're feeling like, you know, we're in the right and we really don't want to hear anybody else's opinions. A lot of times it's a good way to shut children down to just say, oh, you're back talking because X, Y, Z. But when we hold space for our children to have opinions, to have ideas, to tell us when we, you know, they don't agree or align with us, not only are we building on that relationship that we have with our children, but we're also building their communication skills. We're building their problem-solving skills. We're building their inquisitive skills, you know, their investigatory skills. They're learning about the world around them and how we can interact. And when we allow our children to have that space, we're actually helping them to build skills, really useful life skills that they can carry out into the world with them and use in a lot of different places. And when we shut down our children's input again and again and again, because I'm the parent, because I said so, because this is how it has to be, because it's for the greater good and all of these other things, we're disallowing our children to learn all of these really important life skills. And we're sending a message that they're less important and that they're not worthy of respect, and that in fact, them having an opinion, having an idea is disrespectful to us. And in the long run, that creates a lot of fear and tension and energy around decision making. You know, if you always feel like somebody's going to tell you no, or your idea is bad, or shut you down, or act like your idea is disrespectful. As you're growing into an adult, when you have an idea or something that you want to share, or you want to tell somebody about something that, you know, they may not be completely comfortable with, you're going to have this pathway in your brain that reminds you that your ideas aren't valid, that your opinions don't matter, that your autonomy doesn't matter. And it makes it that much harder to communicate what you need and to get over that lump, that hill, into really speaking your mind and interacting with whatever it is in life. And holding space for our children's opinion is so much more than just, you know, not allowing or allowing them to backtalk or something like that. It truly is one of the greatest ways that we build the connection, we build the relationship, and we help them to navigate life so that they know and they feel confident in the ways that we navigate life and navigate relationships and the ways that we can compromise and collaborate with our loved ones, and that everybody in a family unit is worthy of respect. You know, backtalk is one of these concepts that, in fact, I was able to completely let go of. When I think of the idea of backtalk, I kind of laugh a little bit, even, because it seems so foreign and strange. And it's certainly something that in my earlier parenting years, I definitely believed in, you know. And anytime, you know, my children wanted to have an opinion or an idea or tell me that maybe I wasn't completely doing something right, or that they were disaligned with the thing that I was doing, I would certainly get defensive and fall into that corner where I was like, no, you just can't backtalk me, and I'm just going to shut down all the conversation around this. And at some point, I decided to unpack that bag. And now when I think about backtalk, it shocks me. It's like one of those things where you're like, wow, really? Like, we actually were able to convince ourselves that was an okay or healthy or acceptable way to interact with anybody. And somehow we've almost, you know, as a society, we've been truly gaslit into believing that backtalk is a cornerstone for disrespectful children. And when I look at it and I break it down and I think about it, it all kind of turns back to a place where parents are allowed to be incredibly disrespectful to children, to shut them down, to block out any of their anything. You know, at this point, they're completely disrespectful and unacceptable if they even continue to talk, if they open their mouths, unless they want to get right on board with what we're saying. And that in itself is incredibly disrespectful way to treat somebody. And we as parents in this mainstream paradigm, we sit up here on this high horse going, you can't backtalk me, you can't disrespect me, I'm going to shut you down. In a turnaround that becomes one of the most disrespectful possible ways that we could treat our children, to not hear their voice, to not respect their autonomy, to not allow them to have opinions, to not allow them to be a part of the family and navigating the things that we're doing and the reasons we're doing them and whether or not they want to be present for those things. And, you know, it all comes out on the other side looking like we, the parents, are certainly the disrespectful ones if we're still applying to this concept. So hopefully we're able to let it go and move into a much more collaborative relationship-based place with our children where their opinions matter to us and we really care about their ideas. And if we're being disrespectful to our child in any way, if we're hurting them, we want them to tell us. We want them to share that with us because we genuinely want to do better and we want to treat them with the respect that they deserve. And having a mutually respecting relationship with our children is the most magical thing. And, you know, it can feel really hard in the depths of it when our children are younger and they're having a lot of these small child type behaviors, a lot of the jiggling and the moving around and the, you know, screaming and yelling and the name calling and all of the things that little kids sometimes do. It can feel, you know, really frustrating to not have the like power or the strength or the control to just shut this thing down in the moment and to move forward. But I can't reiterate enough the way that our relationships with our older children as they grow, and I don't mean older like adult children, but of course that as well, but you know, as our children grow and they get more understanding and comprehensive and they gain more and more of these tools and they start interacting with us differently and they feel that relationship connection and you feel that relationship connection, I can't even describe what it is that is just so amazing and connective and magical about those relationships when we get there past all of the manipulative and power paradigms that we have set up and we get to the other side with our children. It is such a comfortable and relaxed space of mutual respect that it's truly a mind-blowing thing, and I wish it for all people, and I wish it for all children, and I wish it for all adult children with our parents. And it's a very beautiful thing we can have when we get past any ideas that any person in a relationship has more power and control than somebody else in a relationship, and that their opinions, ideas, and autonomy matter more, so we can shut down somebody else's with some abstract concept of being disrespectful or rude because we don't want to hear what you have to say on this topic. So thank you everybody for being here today.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'd love for you to find us on social media. You can find our big parenting group, Gentle Parents Unite, on Facebook. And we also have a public page, also called Gentle Parents Unite. Our membership site, where we do more personal, intimate parenting support services and coaching and meditations and different things that we have, all geared towards really supporting parents in a really intense and personal way. You can just type in gentleparentsunite.com and you can find us there. Vivek's articles and videos can be found at Meaningful Ideas. Over 60 videos, and between my blog and my Facebook page, about 500 articles. And we wish you all the best, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.